hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fort that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fort that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Oh, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Remember that Greek philosopher Socrates, something he said really rings a bell these days. When the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the losers. You know, have you ever challenged something about race? It's alleged blacks are overrepresented in the prison system. Well, that's certainly the case in the United States and Canada. I mean, there are more. They're incarcerated in greater numbers than their proportion of the population. Okay, that's a fact. And then if you take it the next step further and say, well, that's the reason for that is that they commit a disproportionate number of violent crimes. Oh, you're a racist. When you offer a difficult observation, it's easier to, rather than to disagree with you or argue with you. Well, actually, there is not much of an argument. Easier just to slander you, call you names. I heard about this global warming thing, right? Okay, the temperature at 8 o'clock Friday morning in Oymyakon, Sakhalin Republic, in Russia, was minus 36 degrees Fahrenheit. let's have that again. Minus 36 degrees Fahrenheit in Oymyakon in the Sakha Republic in Russia. And the comment I put up on Facebook, and I got this from actually a good supporter in Maryland, the comment was, global warming's at it again, and all the Arctic polar ice is melting. Quickly, trust me, polar bears are drowning. and don't forget your sunscreen. It's really important that we constantly call the liars up on the call them out on their lies. People are being scared nearly witless. because of what was called has been called global warming. Well, now that's been so discredited that they've retreated and now call it climate change. They can't lose with climate change. Climate is always changing. I mean, it's never identically the same this year as it was last year, so there's a change. And in many cases, that's nothing more than an interesting little fact that has no other implications. In some cases, if there's a persistent pattern, then there may have to be some human accommodation. But there's nothing we can do to prevent climate change. And that's one of the central issues politically. The efforts by the Luddites to impose all sorts of radical measures on us to fight this thing that doesn't exist called climate change. Climate change does exist, but man has no role in what is happening. In organizing this speaking tour, and I'm now just finishing the Western leg. I'm finishing in Edmonton tonight. I tried to book a room at the Best Western Emerald Isle in Sydney, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island. Sydney is just a suburb just north of Victoria. And I'd held a number of meetings there over the years, including one in February with Monica Schaefer. And when I called, I was in we're going through the process of, right down, I guess at the other end, they're recording my name and checking on my phone number and the usual stuff. And then suddenly there was a pause, and I believe another voice came on. This is the manager, and the manager said, I don't mean to upset you. Well, when somebody introduces a comment like that, you're already on edge, of course. I don't mean to upset you. Well, what's the issue? Well, it turns out that they would not do business with me anymore. Well, why was that, I said? Well, there'd been an incident at the front desk last time I was there, which would be in February. I said, well, I'm not aware of any incident. I arrived, I checked in, I usually pay in advance. I guess I got my key. And then the next day, I paid my, checked out, paid my bill and all that, left the room in good order. I couldn't understand what this incident was. Well, the manager said that she didn't know exactly, but there'd been an incident, and the staff did not feel safe. I said, I categorically deny that anything like that happened. I didn't get into a shouting match with the staff. In fact, my relations have always been cordial. Didn't have an argument with anybody, didn't threaten anybody, didn't come in roaring drunk. Just none of the things that might possibly lead to anybody being afraid or feeling unsafe. That's the new snowflake thing. And I thought, privately, I thought, well, look, even if some member of staff didn't feel safe, absent a direct threat, like, if you don't hurry up, I'm going to jump over the counter and punch you in the face five times. Absent something like that. As adults, it's expected that we will put up with a certain degree of uneasiness in certain circumstances, no matter what your job is. Anyway, I decided I would let that go, and wait for the phone call. Well, the phone call never came. So now, over 2 weeks later, I called again. And this time I spoke to Catherine, and she's the manager. Well, she's the new manager. She was not the previous manager, and that's also significant. Well, she said she hadn't called me because she'd been away on business for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. You think? All you have to do is pick up your cell phone, unless you're away on business tracking the polar bears, but okay. Fine, she says she's away on business. Now, I said, well, I repeated my problem. I said, well, I didn't know there ever was any such incident. I've done business with you for your hotel for a number of years, I've never had any problem. There was no incident. Well, I was told there had been an incident with attitude to the check-in staff. And she added, of course, we have a right to refuse business. And she thought it might have been the tone of my voice at checkout. Now it's checkout. We won't be able to honor your reservation. She was quite clear about that. And she said, I said, well, you know, there was no such thing. Can you give me any details? Your tone of your voice. I mean, did you now have to check in, kowtowing and with a very, very meek and mild voice? I don't want to upset you if it's okay, I'm Mr. Smith and I have a reservation. You sure I'm not offending you with the tone of my voice or the level of my voice? But there was no such incident. I didn't come in booming with a big booming voice and yell, where's my effing room or something like that. I mean, this is not my style. And of course the details were really fake. Well, it turns out this had all been recorded by the previous manager, who is no longer manager. But she was quite clear that even though she really didn't know the details, they would not want any business from me. And, you know, frankly, I just don't buy this. First of all, it's stupid to turn away business, particularly now. This is not a hot tourist time in that part of British Columbia. So why would you turn away, what would probably amount to a couple hundred dollars worth of business? It's because maybe the tone of voice. There was no effort, of course, to solve this. That might have, for instance, like with some real specifics and say, we'll forget about that. But just next time, please be very sensitive. Our desk staff are emotionally French. But I don't believe that. But usually there'd be a way to settle this. Instead of, you said something, well, we don't quite remember what or know what. It might be in the tone of your voice, or it was your attitude. Well, my attitude was nothing more than businesslike. Here's my name. You've got a reservation for me. Yeah, okay. What do you need? Okay, you need a credit card. Do you have a vehicle? No, I don't. Bang, bang, bang. 30 seconds later, you get your room card, and almost the opposite the next morning. Room, whatever, checking out. They take the bill out, and if there's any additional charges, they're added in. Credit card is probably swiped again, and you get your receipt, and off you go. And that's all that ever happened. So what's going on here? Well, they won't tell me. They're very adamant. Well, I guess the easy thing is to say, there are other places, and indeed there are other places, and I had my meeting Tuesday night in Victoria in another place. I have been in touch with the provincial authorities, to see if there is some comeback. Because they won't really give me the details, they're trying to make it difficult, because I think this is a fairly clear case of discrimination under the BC Human Rights Act. You've got to be able to prove that it's discrimination on one of the prohibited grounds, and with good reason. And my argument would be there was no good reason. I was not being prevented from renting a room for any good reason. And I would argue that even if there had been some misunderstanding in terms of rudeness, and there wasn't. There was no rudeness. There was no issue. But even if there had been, not wanting to do business again, and apparently ever again, well, let's say until management changes, is the nuclear option. I'll tell you, I frankly think it was political discrimination. I'll tell you why. Monica Schaefer was my guest, and she was the speaker at our meeting. And a couple of days later, the local paper ran a write-up about Monica. And in that, they mentioned that she'd been speaking in Victoria. And we'd given the interview a day or two before, I believe. But as it's, I believe, a weekly paper, the write-up didn't appear for a few days. Now, the write-up I didn't think was particularly good, but it's so-so, but what you might expect. And my belief is, and, you know, absent the honesty of the hotel to say, I think some employee found that, or saw the item in the local paper, and went into the management and said, that woman, she denied the Holocaust. You know, Monica, of course, had made the video, sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. That is my best guess, because the facts, otherwise, as I present them, really make no sense. Why would they turn down a paying customer, absent of, let's say, terrible behavior, you know, one having been drunk and disorderly, let's say, or had damaged hotel property, or somehow not paid the bill. So none of those things apply. Well, this is, of course, not the first time this has happened. And we are in a war. And I remind my audience that. I reminded my audience in Vancouver of that last night, that we are in a war for free speech. And we are up against street-level crazies like the Antifa, who will resort to violence. And then we're up against more establishment-level people who have absolutely no respect for freedom of speech. If indeed the problem was Monica Schaefer, if that really was the problem, then this is, of course, outright political discrimination. How do we get back at these people? And I've said for a good number of years, until we can start leaving some blood on the carpet, until we can start hurting them back because they're cowards, because they have no respect for free speech, they will continue to try to hurt us. So this becomes an open question. I don't have all the answers. But here's a bit of good news on the similar front. This comes from Ezra Levant's Rebel Media. Good news. I found a way to stop leftist bullying from canceling conservative events. That's Ezra Levant says this. Last month, left-wing bullies, including a university professor and an NDP politician, pressured a theater into canceling my book signing event. That was in Edmonton, I believe. I had a contract with a theater. I paid them in advance. Everything was set to go. But then an online mob harassed the theater owner until he breached his contract with me, canceled the event, and literally locked the doors. typical Canadian, gutless. When the Lord handed out testicles, they missed this guy, or he missed this guy. So last week I sued him for breach of contract. He still hasn't even given me the money back from the theater rental. But I did something new. I sued all of the bullies too, at least the ones I could identify, the ones who were leading the mob on social media. We are suing them for inducing the breach of contract. You see, you cannot urge somebody to break the law. And breaking a contract is a tort, or you know, a legal crime or mistake. Ezra Levant continues, they knew we had a contract with the theater. They helped cause the breach of the contract, and we lost thousands of dollars because of it. So, what's new here? We're not letting the mob go. We've identified members of the mob, and we're suing them. Read the lawsuit yourself. It's written in plain English. You can read it, and I will in a moment. It was written by our great free speech law firm in Edmonton as a way to preserve our freedom of the press, freedom of speech, and freedom of association. Those rights were trampled by the bullies, so we're fighting back. Right before he ripped up the contract with me, the theater owner told me the threats against him were so bad, he was literally losing sleep over it. I still don't think he should have canceled, but don't you think someone has to tell those bullies they were wrong? If they don't see it, maybe they need a judge to tell them. So we filed a lawsuit last week, and we've begun serving it on the bullies, who include a university professor and a former NDP politician. Now, he thinks it may cost up to $100,000 to go through with this, and he's seeking money, which is interesting. And a lot, I think this is absolutely the way to go. Until you can start hurting them, they will continue to threaten. Now, I agree with Ezra Levant, of course, that some of this falls on the theater owner. He's a coward. So there were some threats made to him. Let me think, what could you do? This is a tough one. I know. Call the police. If somebody phoned you several times and said, I'm going to, if you go to work tomorrow, I'm going to throw a brick through your front window, or I'm going to punch you out if I see you. Well, what would you do? Well, you call the police and say, this person or some person has made threats against me of this nature. I want protection. And that then becomes a matter for the police to do something. We would need to know more specifics as to what the police might do. But I'll tell you what the easy thing to do is. And that's what the manager did. Throws up his hand and says, oh, this is just too much for me. Oh, this is beyond my my pay grade. So I'm canceling the meeting. Well, a contract should be binding. And what Ezra Levant is doing, and I hope this succeeds, is forcing hotel managers or venue managers to honor their contracts. You know, the hotel would be beyond outraged beyond all measure had Ezra Levant had the event and walked away and not paid them anything. or refused to pay them. that there'd be hell to pay, and the hotel manager, in this case I guess theater manager, would quite rightly stand on his honor, and say, I've got a legal contract. you've got to honor it. And this suit was filed on November the 12th in the Court of Queen's Bench. And it's between Ezra Levant and Rebel News Network and Historic Princess Theatres Incorporated, Makan Brar, who I guess is the theater owner, Nancy Lavelle, Crawford Johnson, Jim Story, Jessica Littlewood, Rich Kearney, Matt Walton, John Doe 1, John Doe 2, John Doe 3, John Doe 4. These are ones that, I guess these are people who made postings on the internet demanding that the event be canceled, the contract be canceled, and the event cannot as yet identify.
I filed a lawsuit in Edmonton this week that might be of interest to you if you want to fight back against the new left-wing tactic called deplatforming. You know what deplatforming is, right? It's when leftists who disagree with you get you canceled. When they bully someone like a university or a public library into canceling a speech from someone they don't like. It's happening more and more. Even the mayor of Toronto tried to bully the Toronto Public Library into canceling a speech by a women's rights activist.
The library has its own policy with respect to when people should and should not be able to rent rooms on their premises. They have taken the decision in this case that this particular person should be able to give their talk in a library building. I don't think it's appropriate for politicians to substitute their judgment for actually making these decisions, because we have a duly appointed library board and we have library management who oversee a written policy in this regard. I simply indicated I was disappointed at that decision. My office asked the library to reconsider the decision.
It's happening a lot, and it happened to me last month. I rented theaters to have book signings for my new best-selling political book called The Libranos. I love those theaters. I've gone to them for years. I've done Rebel News events there before, as you can see in these tweets from a couple years back. We had sold out events.
Seriously, what is this? Listerine Go-Tabs aren't gum mints.
So I rented those same theaters again in Calgary and Edmonton. But this time, a group of bullies swarmed the theater owner and threatened him with dire consequences if he didn't breach his contract with us. I tried to give him courage, I talked him on the phone, I gave him a pep talk, I hired private security at my own expense, I made sure there were plenty of police there too, but the owner caved in to the mob. When it came to the day of the events, he locked the doors on us, and the staff hid inside with the lights off. It was pitiful. So I had to give a speech outside the theaters, and it was cold, so we walked to a nearby pub in each city to finish the book signing. By the way, in each city, only a single protester actually showed up. But look, I'm not going to be a victim here. I just refuse to be. I did nothing wrong. They did something wrong. We don't ban books. We don't do the equivalent of a book burning. That's what canceling a book signing is like, really.
It's here.
We don't do that
Neutrogena Hydro.
Especially when I had a contract with the owner. I paid him in full, in advance. He actually hasn't even refunded that money yet. So I sued. I just filed a lawsuit against the theater owner for breach of contract. Now, that's pretty ordinary. But I did something that I don't think has ever been done before that I know of. And that is I sued all the people who bullied the theater owner into breaching the contract. You can see some of their names here, and some of the people who don't know their names yet, we put them down for now as John Doe. But others we do know. Nancy Lavelle, who is a professor at the University of Alberta. Jessica Littlewood, who used to be an NDP MLA. Jim Story. He's an activist at a left-wing pressure group called Progress Alberta. And other names, too. We'll find out more names through the discovery process of the lawsuit. We'll get copies of the emails that pressured the theaters to cancel. We'll add those names to the lawsuit, too. We're suing these people for inducing the breach of contract. They knew we had a contract with the theater. They helped cause the breach of the contract, and we suffered losses. We lost thousands of dollars because of it. That's against the law, not just for the theater owner, but for those who bullied him. That's what's new here. We're not letting the mob go. We've identified members of the mob, and we're suing them. Inducing breach of contract isn't a new kind of a lawsuit. It's often used, for example, if some talented entertainer has an exclusive contract with one record company, and another record label tries to get them to break that contract and switch over to them. Usually it's a commercial dispute. As far as I know, this is the first time this law has been used against people who induce the breach of contract just for censorship and bullying reasons. I'd like to invite you to read the whole lawsuit. It's written in pretty plain English. You don't need to be a lawyer to understand it. In addition to breach of contract, there are some other things we're suing for, including defamation, because they said atrocious things about us, false things, including, believe it or not, that I'm a Nazi, even though I'm Jewish. We're using other grounds, too, including conspiracy and unlawful interference. The breach of contract cost us about $20,000 in direct costs when they didn't let us in the theater. So we're suing the theater owner and all these deplatformers for that money. And for defamation. Sir, you just can't publicly call me a Nazi. It's not true. By the way, learn some history. It was the Nazis who were the book burners. We're also asking the court for aggravated damages. If you have time, I really recommend you read this part of the lawsuit. You can see the whole lawsuit at stopdeplatforming.com. This lawsuit was written by our great free speech law firm in Edmonton. See, this wasn't some commercial dispute like the two record labels fighting over an entertainer. The purpose here was censorship, to infringe on our country's political freedom, freedom of the press, the right to have a debate during an election campaign, the right to have a free exchange of ideas. I think it's actually worse than just a quarrel over money. These deplatformers were interfering with the building blocks of our liberal democracy, and in the middle of an election, no less. Sorry, that stops now. I want my money back for the theater rental and for all the other money we wasted trying to fix this problem, but it's not about $20,000 for those costs or the other damages we're seeking. That's not what it's about. This is about letting the world know you can't do this anymore. Not to me, not to anyone. I truly hope that anyone and everyone who is unlawfully deplatformed sues, not just the guy who rips up their contract, but the bullies who pressed that guy to do it. The theater owner told me the threats against him were so bad he was literally losing sleep over it. Don't you think someone has to tell those bullies they're wrong? I really can't believe we have a former politician and a professor on the list of people who just don't get it. But hopefully this court case will remind them of the importance of debate. Let me close on a sentimental note. You know, when I was growing up, especially when I was a student in university, people who disagreed with me, well, they ignored me, or they debated me, or they had their own events to rebut me. I remember university in the 90s being that way. I loved it. We all debated and heckled and argued, but we were actually sort of friends. But this whole deplatforming cancel culture, that's new, and it's unhealthy for the whole society. It's bullying, obviously, and it's unfair, but it actually stops us from talking to each other as a country. I mean, it's unlikely that hardcore left-wingers and right-wingers would suddenly change their minds by attending a debate with the other side. But at least it would remind us all that we're all citizens together. We're all trying to resolve our differences peacefully and hopefully through an exchange of ideas. That's what university was like for me. The debating enforced some sort of mutual civility. You know, the concept of a public square. I don't know if you know this, but my debating partner back in University of Calgary is actually Naheed Menchi, who's now the left-wing Muslim mayor of Calgary, and I was a right-wing Jew, and we were debating partners. Can you believe that? That's what it used to be like before deplatforming. Not anymore. That's the worst part of cancel culture. We don't even engage with each other anymore. We don't even try to convince our neighbors. Instead of friends arguing over politics for hours, we just unfriend people. That's cancel culture. I don't like it. So we filed a lawsuit against these bullies. It's probably going to cost us a lot more to sue than anything we might win at trial. Just to research the law here and put together this statement of claim cost us $4,700 already. That's our first bill. I've been through enough of these to know that a trial where we're suing a dozen defendants, it's going to take at least a week in court, and that and all the preparation, it's probably going to be $100,000 to get through that. Obviously, we're not doing this to make money.
So that was Ezra Levant, in his own words, explaining this lawsuit and the fighting back against cancel culture. Gotta say, long overdue. Until we can leave some blood on the carpet, that things are not going to improve. Here's a story from Baltimore. Former Baltimore mayor indicted on federal charges. In the midst of Democrats trying to prove Donald Trump is corrupt, another member of their fold is being outed as a real criminal. Former Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh, she's a negress, is now facing federal charges regarding her self-published children's books. Pugh was a controversial mayor from the outset, and this scandal is not going to help the case of a city that seems to be about as corrupt as the Ukraine. The former mayor resigned in May due to the controversies surrounding her Healthy Holly children's book series. According to her indictment, Pugh has been charged with 7 counts of wire fraud and 2 counts of tax evasion, as well as conspiracy to defraud the United States and wire fraud. Prosecutors in the case are claiming that Hugh used funds from the book sales to contribute to her political campaign and political interests, as well as funding her lifestyle. Reports have also stated that Hugh estimated her 2016 underestimated her 2016 income, underestimated by almost $300,000. I mean, that job as mayor must pay him a fortune. Now, this is not a poor black woman. The reason that the book deal is so troublesome is because of the vow Hugh made for complete transparency, as well as the corrupt nature in which the book deal was secured. Pugh never disclosed the book deal on her General Assembly ethics form. The book deal also appears to have been a rigged deal for influence within the city government. At the time of the deal, Pugh was sitting on the board of the University of Maryland medical system. It was also revealed that the contract was a no-bid deal, which is where the corruption angle comes in. Healthy Holly was sold to multiple nonprofits and organizations tied to the city, including the University of Maryland medical system. And Pugh raked in about $800,000 from the sales, according to USA Today. Ultimately, Pugh resigned from her office in May after the scandal broke, claiming medical issues prevented her from returning to her duties. I guess it gave her a headache, a big headache. More recently, she has apologized for the harm I've done to the image of the city of Baltimore and to the credibility of the office of the mayor. Pugh faces up to 20 years in prison for the wire fraud charges and up to 5 years for each tax evasion count. So, it sounds like another corrupt politician. Well, here's from the Quarterly Journal for Free Historical Inquiry. Sorry, another example of inconvenient history. And I'm just going to introduce this, and I will continue it next day. One of the great tragedies of the 20th century was the forced expulsion of ethnic Germans from their ancestral homes in Europe after the end of the Second World War. The Allies carried out the largest forced population transfer and perhaps the greatest single movement of people in human history. A minimum of 12 million and possibly as many as 18.1 million Germans were driven from their homes because of their ethnic background. It was ethnic cleansing, pure and simple. Probably 2.1 million of these German expellees, mostly women and children, died in what was supposed to have been an orderly and humane, quotation marks, expulsion. One estimate of the number of Germans expelled runs to 16.5 million, broken down thus. 9.3 million within the 1937 Reich borders and 7.2 million outside. The Germans living within the 1937 Reich borders included 2,382,000 East Prussians, 1,822,000 East Pomeranians, 614,000 in Brandenburg east of the Oder, and 4,469,000 Silesians, that's Silesians now in Poland, or Schlesia. The Germans outside the 1937 Reich borders included 240,000 in Memel in the Baltic states, 373,000 in Danzig, which is now in Poland, 1.293 million in Poland, 3,493,000 in Czechoslovakia, these are the Sudeten Germans, 601,000 in Hungary, 509,000 in Yugoslavia, and 785,000 in Romania. These last two groups were called the Donauschwaben, or the Danube-Schwabians. The Russians did not expel as many of their 1.8 million Volga Germans from the Soviet Union. Instead, the Volga Germans were predominantly deported to other distant locations within the then Soviet Union. The mass expulsions of entire populations after the conclusion of armed conflict was not in the European tradition. With the exception of the Treaty of Lausanne in July 1923, which sanctioned the mutual expulsions after the Greek-Turkish War 1921-22, European nations did not contemplate nor carry out resettlement schemes prior to World War II. The Poles and Czechs, however, were determined to forcibly expel their German minority populations under the auspices of international organizations. These two governments in exile, located in London during most of the Second World War, sought approval from the victorious Allies for the forced expulsion of their German populations. And I'm going to continue that on another broadcast, but at least you get the gist. The broad figures are 16 million, not six, 16 million ethnic Germans expelled. Estimates run up to 3 million murdered, starved, died along the way. This was the greatest ethnic cleansing in human history. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to play a Merle Haggard song. I love the sentiments here, and of course, it plays on a theme that Donald Trump would pick up a couple of years later in his campaign, and it's called America First. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Coast. Here's another song along the same lines, Politically Uncorrect. Now, I have to say, as an English instructor, it's probably no such word as uncorrect. It's politically incorrect. But that's the name of this song with Gretchen Wilson and with an assist from Merle Haggard. Politically Uncorrect. Gretchen Wilson.
Must come down.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas.
The family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
They're concerned about the violence and the death.
Seems like I have, you know, less money to spend
another
on
another deadly day in Iraq as 11 U.S. soldiers.
I'm for the little man on the totem pole. And I'm for the underdog. God bless his soul. And I'm for the guys still pulling third shift, and the single mom raising her kids. And I'm for the preachers who stay on their knees. And I'm for the sinner who finally believes. And I'm for the farmer with dirt on his hands. And the soldiers who fight for this land.
Gretchen Wilson with an assist from Merle Haggard, Politically Uncorrect. And here's a song by the late George Jones, Who's Going to Fill Their Shoes?
Who you carrying there, pal?
George Jones.
You mean the band? George must fly everywhere.
Nope. It's George's trip. We're heading home.
We don't see nobody since the interstate opened. Do you think he might sign my guitar?
He's awake in there.
Holler at him. Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones?
Yeah. Hey, old Hammond. What do you know?
Would you sign my guitar?
A few others, Al. I sure would.
Great. Just a second.
Oh, my goodness. Would you look at this? Waylon, Hank, Lefty, Willie. Where in the world did you get this?
They were all right here. This used to be the main highway. We just got lucky a few years, I guess.
Well, my goodness. What else you got?
Come on in.
All right.
You know, this old world is full of singers, but just a few are chosen to tear your heart out when they sing. Imagine life without them. All your radio heroes, like the outlaw that walks through Jesse's dream. No, there'll never be another red-headed stranger, a man in black and Folsom prison blue. The Okie from Muskogee, or hello, darling. Lord, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes.
Who's gonna fill their shoes? Who's gonna stand that tall?
Who's gonna play the Opry and the Wabash Cannonball? Who's gonna give their heart and soul to get to me and you? Lord, I wonder
who's gonna fill their shoes?
God bless the boys from Memphis. Blue suede shoes and Elvis. Much too soon he left this world in tears. They tore up the 50s. Old Jerry Lee and Charlie. And Go Cat Go still echoes through the years. You know the heart of country music still beats in Luke the Drifter. You can tell it when he sang I Saw the Light. Old Marty Hank and Lefty, why I can feel him right here with me on this silver eagle rolling through the night.
Who's gonna fill their shoes? Who's gonna stand that tall?
Who's gonna play the Opry and the
Wabash Cannonball?
Who's gonna give their heart and soul to get to me and you? Lord, I wonder
who's gonna fill their shoes?
Yes, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes.
Hey, George, what happened back there?
It's a great song by George Jones.
Came calling home last night.
Here's a song by one of the men he mentioned, Lefty Frizzell. I'm gonna hire a lino.
I made it to my feet as she opened up the door. She said, you're not gonna do this anymore. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home. So you'll feel more at ease here, and you won't need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table. We'll put a bar along that wall. And a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, just bring those Friday paychecks and I'll cash them all right here. And I'll keep on tap for all your friends, their favorite kind of beer. And for you, I'll always keep in stock those soft aluminum cans. And when you're feeling macho, you can crush her like a man. She said, we'll rip out all the carpet and put sawdust on the floor. Serve hard-boiled eggs, pretzels, and I won't cook no more. There'll be Monday night football on TV above the bar, and a payphone in the hallway when your friends can't find their car. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you'll feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table and put a bar along that wall, and a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, you'll get friendly service and for added atmosphere, I'll slip on something sexy and I'll cut it clear to here. Then you can slap my bottom every time you tell a joke. Just as long as you keep tipping, well, I'll laugh until you're broke. She said, instead of a family quarrel, we'll have a barroom brawl. When the Helms Bear says it's closing time, you won't have far to crawl. And when you run out of money, you'll have me to thank. You can sleep it off next morning while I'm putting it in the bank. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. Then when you and your friends get off from work and you have a powerful thirst, well, there won't be any reason why you can't stop off here first. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you'll feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table, put a bar along that wall, and a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. We'll take out.
This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back to the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign out tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.